All right, so we're diving into some fascinating legal territory today. This case, Blessing v. Freestone from 1997, might seem kind of niche at first glance, but stick with me because it gets really interesting, I promise. This case is kind of the gatekeeper when we talk about whether regular people like you and me can actually sue states when federal programs, those designed to help us, don't quite deliver what they're supposed to.
Yeah, that's a really crucial question, especially when you think about how much of our social safety net relies on this kind of federal-state partnership.
Exactly. So, like, imagine the federal government gives money to states to run certain programs like child support enforcement, right? Makes sense. But what happens if that system is a mess plagued with problems? Can the people who are supposed to be helped by it, the parents struggling to get child support, actually take the state to court and say, hey, you're not holding up your end of the bargain?
Right, and that's precisely the dilemma at the heart of Blessing. We're talking about Title 4D of the Social Security Act, which is all about federal funding for state-run child support programs.
Right. And in this case, we have a group of mothers in Arizona who were essentially arguing that the system there was so broken, riddled with things like understaffing and these just bureaucratic nightmares, that it was denying them the very support they were entitled to.
And the lower courts actually had different opinions on this, with the Ninth Circuit even suggesting there was this broad right to what they called substantial compliance from the states.
So our mission today is to unpack all of this, figure out why the Supreme Court ultimately decided to step in, and really importantly, what kind of framework they created for deciding when these federal programs actually create individual rights that people can then enforce through lawsuits using something called Section 1983.
And that's where it gets super interesting because Section 1983 is a powerful tool, and it's not a blank check. You can't just sue a state under Section 1983 for anything. You have to show that a federal right has been violated.
So let's break it down. The central question in Blessing is really whether Title 4VD itself actually gives individuals that right to sue under Section 1983 to force a state to substantially comply with the Act's requirements.
Right, and zooming out a bit, this case really boils down to how we distinguish between the federal government setting these kind of broad goals for a state-run program versus actually creating enforceable rights for the people the program is supposed to benefit.
Okay, so to tackle that, the court laid out a three-part test, and understanding this test is key for anyone looking at legal issues around federal funding in general.
Absolutely. This test is cited all the time in cases dealing with federal spending programs.
Okay, so let's take it step by step. What's the first thing the court looks at?
The first factor is all about congressional intent. Did Congress, when they wrote this specific part of the law, intend to benefit a very particular group of people, like those mothers in Arizona, or were they more focused on the bigger picture goals of the child support program as a whole?
I see. So it's about whether the law is aimed at helping a specific group of people directly, or if it's more about setting up a system with broader aims.
Precisely. The court is trying to figure out who did Congress have in mind when they wrote this?
Okay, so that's step one, congressional intent. Now, what about the second factor? What's the court looking for there?
Factor number two gets into the nitty-gritty of the right being claimed. Is it specific and well-defined, or is it what the court called vague and amorphous? This is where that idea of substantial compliance in Blessing really ran into trouble.
I see. So it's not enough for a right to exist in theory. It has to be clear and specific enough for a court to actually say, yes, this right was violated.
Exactly. The court needs to be able to measure it, assess it, and ultimately enforce it.
Got it. So how does the court figure that out?
Well, they look for language in the statute that provides concrete benchmarks or standards. Think about it this way. Saying a state has to provide good child support services is pretty vague. What does good even mean in that context? It's subjective. It's hard to measure.
Right. But if the law says something like the state must take specific steps to establish paternity within a certain time frame, that's way more concrete.
Exactly. That gives the court something to work with, a clear standard to evaluate whether the state is meeting its obligations.
Okay, so specificity is key. Now, remind me again, what was that third factor in the court's test?
The third factor focuses on whether there's a mandatory obligation placed directly on the states. The court scrutinizes the language of the statute, looking for strong wording like shall, which indicates a clear command, as opposed to more suggestive language like should aim to.
Ah, so it's all about finding that legally binding language that shows Congress really meant for this to be a requirement, not just a suggestion.
Precisely. It's about establishing that Congress imposed an obligation that individuals can hold the state accountable for in court.
Okay, so in Blessing, the court looked at this substantial compliance language And they basically saw it as more of a directive to HHS, at the Department of Health and Human Services, to oversee the state's performance and maybe penalize them by withholding funds if they weren't meeting the program's overall goals.
Right. It was more about the federal government saying to the states, hey, are you generally doing a decent job with this program? Not necessarily about creating individual rights that could be enforced through lawsuits.
And that's where Justice Scalia's concurring opinion adds this whole other layer of complexity to the case. He questioned whether individuals should ever be able to sue under Section 1983 as what's called a third-party beneficiary of these federal-state funding agreements.
Scalia argued that these agreements are basically contracts between the states and the federal government, not direct promises made to individual citizens. So his view was that letting people sue based on these agreements would kind of stretch the original intent of Section 1983 too far.
So Scalia was even more cautious than the majority about letting people use Section 1983 to enforce these kinds of federal-state agreements.
Yeah, he was worried about federal courts getting too involved in micromanaging state programs based on what he saw as potentially vague or overly broad federal mandates.
I see. So what does all this mean for people who are actually trying to understand how these federal programs work and whether they can actually rely on them?
Blessing is a huge wake-up call. It tells us that it's not enough to just point to a federal program and say, well, this program is supposed to help people, so they must be able to sue if it doesn't work right.
So you have to get down into the weeds of the law itself, find the specific language that Congress used, and figure out if it actually creates a real enforceable right for individuals.
Exactly. It's all about meticulous statutory analysis. You got to find those magic words, those clear mandatory provisions that show Congress specifically intended to create a right that individuals could enforce in court.
But the court in Blessing didn't completely shut the door on the idea that Title IV-V could create some individual rights. They actually sent the case back down to the lower courts and told the plaintiffs they could try to find specific provisions within Title IV-D that do create those kinds of rights. So, for example, if there's a provision that says states shall take certain steps to establish paternity or enforce child support orders, those might be more likely to create enforceable rights for individuals.
Right. It's all about finding those very specific obligations that are directly imposed on the states.
So the takeaway here is that you always have to ask, does this law create a concrete right that an individual can point to with clear duties on the state, or is it more of a general goal or aspiration for the state's program?
Blessing really raised the bar. It showed that courts are going to be very careful about implying a private right of action from these federal funding statutes unless Congress is super clear about their intent.
So to wrap up, Blessing v. Freestone teaches us a really important lesson about the power and the limits of Section 1983 when it comes to federal funding for state programs. And it highlights just how important it is for Congress to be crystal clear in their language if they want to give individuals the ability to sue states over these programs.
Absolutely. This case has had a ripple effect across a whole bunch of spending clause programs, not just child support enforcement.
Think about things like Medicaid, education, all sorts of areas where the federal government provides funding to states with conditions attached.
Blessing makes us ask, what's the magic formula Congress needs to use if they want to give individuals enforceable rights in these programs?
And for those of you out there working in these fields or even just navigating this as citizens, it raises a really tough question. Even when there are systemic failures that are hurting people, what are the actual legal avenues available for them to seek a remedy? Food for thought, for sure.
It's a question that continues to shape legal battles around federal funding to this day.
Well, on that note, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. Thanks for this insightful deep dive.
Glad to be here. Always a pleasure to unpack these complex issues.
And to our listeners out there, keep those legal brains buzzing. And we'll catch you on our next deep dive.
Until then, stay curious.